the expression from the music inspired me so much to take risks, and it inspired damn near the whole rap game.
Hello again, I'm Adam Ons. You may know me as the host of The Opus, and now I'm bringing my own show, The Spark Parade, to the Consequence Podcast Network. I speak with artists and creatives about the cultural artifacts that spark their personal interest and creativity, whether it's music, books, movies, video games, or any other kind of art.
I've never spoke about it in this amount of detail. I'm suddenly going, oh my God, I'm blowing my own mind here, Christ. It's actually a giant part of my life.
By talking about the things we love, we share and discover insights into our personality and the things that drive us.
It's just magic, really. I mean, frustrating. And it makes some people angry, but I don't think anyone's ever done anything like it.
I speak with people like Connor Roberts, Phoenix's Thomas Mars, Chris Gethard, Helen Hong, Adrian Young, and more, so their sparks of inspiration can start a fire in you.
I'm grateful for those who continue to put our history and who we are as a people in the forefront and make you see it.
Find the Spark Parade wherever you get your podcasts.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Welcome, listeners, to another episode of The Story Behind the Song, the Consequence Podcast Network series where I interview the iconic artists behind the most iconic songs of the past few decades. I'm your host, Peter Chatti, and each month I dive deep into conversations with your favorite musicians of all time to get insights into the creative journeys behind their most popular and lasting songs. I also ask each artist about one of their personal favorite deep cuts from their own catalog. And in the process, these living legends reveal frequently surprising, never-before-discussed details about these songs and their creative journeys, as well as candid reflections about their personal triumphs and challenges. In this episode, I speak with legendary queen of percussion herself, Sheila E., who broke out onto the pop scene with a vengeance in 1984 with her classic song, Glamorous Life, one of many collaborations with Prince. But Sheila E. played with legends well before that time, kicking off her professional music career at age 15, playing with her father in Santana's band before thousands. And from that point forward, and ever since, this multi-Grammy-nominated icon fearlessly forged new pathways in the male-dominated world of percussion and played with virtually every name and in every genre of American music royalty. We all know about Prince, of course, but let's not forget Whitney Houston, Diana Ross, Stevie Wonder, Quincy Jones, Michael Jackson, and then on to Beyoncé, Jay-Z, and Kanye, and then showing her incredible range with country stars like Reba McEntire and Brooks and Dunn, and even to opera with legendary tenor Plácido Domingo. All of these icons and so many more consider Sheila their peer. She is the quintessential artist's artist, and her life is a musical odyssey. I asked Sheila all about it, including the genesis of Glamorous Life and how it came to be with Prince in the studio. We also discussed Sheila's pick, one of her most recent songs, and one that shows her incredible range, titled Bailar, the salsa version she co-wrote with musician B. Slade and released as a single last year. So take a listen as we dive into the story behind the song with music legend, queen of percussion, Sheila E. Welcome, everyone. This is Peter Chatti. Welcome to another episode of The Story Behind the Song for the Consequence Podcast Network. And today I am joined by the iconic great artist, Sheila E. Sheila, good to see you.
Thank you. Nice to see you as well, Peter.
Yeah, great to see you. Where are you today?
I'm in my studio. I'm in the lab.
I like the lab. It looks good. Looks good.
Thank you. Thank you.
Look at all those gold records on the wall.
Yeah, there are a few. There's a bunch of them. There's some over there. There's some over there. There's some over there. Yeah, they're all around the room.
That's awesome. That's where all the magic, at least some of the magic happens, not all the magic, but right. Where some of the magic happens.
Yeah.
So Sheila, welcome to Story Behind the Song. And for everybody, this is where I interview great icons of music and we discuss two songs. We dig in deeply into two songs. One of the most iconic songs from the artist. And then the second one, and in this case, I chose Love Bizarre. Actually, I did not choose Love Bizarre. I chose The Glamorous Life for this one. But Love Bizarre is another one that would be a great one to do. And then for the second song, I always ask the artist to choose anything that they'd like from their discography. And so in this case, the second song that Sheila chose was Bailar, the salsa version. So we'll find out why she did. But first, I want to just give a little bit of an introduction, Sheila, because obviously you're a legend. You have multiple hits, multiple Grammy nominated artists. You've worked with the biggest legends in music. And rather than me say that, like, why don't you identify some of the legends that that are peers of yours? And it's really a who's who in the music business.
Oh, yeah. I would have rather you said it.
Okay. Well, I'll speak.
There's so many. Yeah, you say it.
Okay, there's quite a few. Obviously, there's Prince, Michael Jackson, Stevie Wonder, Quincy Jones, Ringo Starr, Lionel Richie. But there's so many more that I could name. I'm sure. Are there others that you'd like to identify?
Yeah, the list is so long. One day, my brother and I was going to do this little promo thing. I said, let's see how many artists I can put in like 60 seconds, you know, of all the people that I performed, recorded, played with, whatever. And it kept going. I couldn't do it all. And I was speaking like Lionel Richie, Dinah Ross, and I kept going. Yeah. I was like, we can't put them all in there. From Phil Collins to Whitney to Beyonce, yeah. Jay-Z, Kanye. There's so many. Then you have Tito Puente, you know, Celia Cruz. I mean, the list, Brooks and Dunn, country music, you know,
yeah.
Reba McEntire. I mean, I've been able to play with so many people in different genres of music, which is really a blessing to be able to do that, you know, because I love all music. And it's just been, even Placido Domingo, like I did I don't know if it was the Oscars we did that one year, but to be able to play with him, I mean, you know, just you never know.
No, it's amazing. It really is incredible that you have such an eclectic range. And yes. Obviously, the title, you are widely known as the Queen of Percussion. And that's, you know, that's quite a title, too. It's a business where, you know, you have been from the very beginning, and there's a lot of DNA in your family that kind of started you off on that path. But listen, involved in so many different things. I just saw you on the, I think it was on the Academy Awards. You were in that band too. And that's just one of many. So great to have you today.
Thank you. I love that picture behind you.
See, look at that. Yep. I know that person. For those of you listening out there, I have a picture of Sheila that's on the back in the screen. So first of all, as I always do, I want you to take me on a guided tour of your, just a few things about your childhood and your, you know, as I mentioned, there's DNA of percussion in your family and of deep music roots in your family. But take me through that a little bit so we learn a little bit about the heritage of how this all began for you.
Well, my dad is Pete Escovedo, legendary Latin jazz artist, and my uncles at the time, back in the day, was Uncle Coke and Uncle Phil, Uncle Bobby. They all played percussion except Uncle Phil played bass. So my dad and my uncle had a band called the Escovedo Brothers. My first performance was playing with my dad at 5. I really didn't know what I had done. I mean, he picked me up and I played congas in his band, but it was interesting because I don't remember that part. I more so remember getting dressed at my grandmother's house. And because I was all about fashion at 5 years old, I was like, oh my God, I have to wear my black patent leather shoes and, and my little frilly white socks and this dress. Oh my God. I remember all that, getting dressed. But my dad had a band with his brothers. And basically being around our house, my dad would like practice the LPs every day, like the vinyl, you know. Any artist that he loved and admired, from Latin jazz to salsa to even R&B, Motown, like he would just practice to vinyl LPs every day. And then, and I mean literally every day, he put on music, and we hardly watched television. Mm-hmm. And then he would have jam sessions, like having other percussion players come in and play with us, or play with him, I should say. And then I would watch. And so, like, if because I'm watching you, like you did this because that was your right hand, I'm looking you in a mirror. So I would do my left hand. So whatever his right hand would do, I would copy in a mirror image and copy him with my left hand. Yeah. So if he played, I practiced on my lap, just watching him going, oh my God, oh my God, you know, watching him playing. And then he would get up and then I'd just get on the congas and go blah, 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 and not even thinking about it. And then once in a while, I'd say maybe once a week or once every couple of weeks, he would have his band or someone's band practicing in the middle of the living room. So we'd have a full-on band with drums, bass, guitar, piano, percussion, you know. And so I grow up listening to live music. Oh my God. I mean, what a gift that is, and a blessing to be able to hear live music in your house.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Every single day. It was incredible. And just learning from that is the reason why I play. I didn't know until later on, but that is the reason, just being around it and being a sponge and just absorbing and watching how they set up from production standpoint as well, how they set up the mics, the cables, the PA system, all of that. I loved all of it.
Well, so when did you start feeling proficient at percussion? At what age?
15.
Okay.
Because I didn't play basically during that time. I liked sports. My mom was loving sports, an athlete herself, basically. And so I just wanted to be an athlete. And I was playing soccer, running track, training to be in the Olympics. Like, I mean, I loved music, but that was not going to be my profession. I really, really thought I was going to win a gold medal. I mean, actually not really thought. I believed that I was, because I was, when I go do something, that's it. Like, let's go. And So I was breaking records in schools that hadn't been broken in 20 years. Like, I was really good. Very good.
Good for you. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, I mean, I didn't play a lot, but like in bands, but we jammed all the time, because growing up in that environment, people would call each other, hey, you know, they're going to go play drums. So-and-so's playing in Berkeley at the college, or on the campus, or over at so-and-so's park. And so we'd all get together and we just jam. And then when other bands started playing, then I started asking, can I sit in, you know,
begging people.
And then I joined a local band at 14, but I joined the band to play drums, and I didn't know how to play drums, but the band called me and said, we heard your dad is in Santana, which he was at the time. And we heard you play drums, and we're a group that plays all of the Santana songs. I was like, oh, okay, well, can you come audition? I was like, sure. I didn't have a drum set. I had nothing.
Yeah.
And I called my cousin and I said, hey, can I borrow your drum set? And he says, you don't even know how to play. And I said, I know, but I have an audition. But the most important thing is, like, it's no big deal because they're playing Santana songs. I know that. That's not, I'll play drums. He goes, but you don't know how to play. I said, sure, I do. I know how to play everything. So I said, but the most important part, please teach me how to set the drums up and tear it down so I look like I know what I'm doing.
There you go. So immediately you dive right in there. And did you feel in that first moment, then you set it up, you look like you knew what you were doing. How long did it take for you to get comfortable in terms of actually doing that? Because you started playing drums there for some of the Santana songs, but with this band, but then you transition into percussion. And then how did that lead to actually going into the music business full throttle and leaving your athleticism behind?
Yeah, 15. So I played in that band. I was going to be 15. I played in that band for a little while. And then I realized switching over to congas in that band, I started with drum switching, and it was only for a short period of time. Playing percussion, all of a sudden I was like, man, I'm just playing like crazy, and things just started coming out, you know, from all of the years listening to my dad. And then I realized that my musicianship went from, okay, I'm in this band, to bing, instantly. And then I thought, wait a minute. And I didn't mean to say it like this. It's not like you guys were not great. It was an incredible band. We had so much fun. But I thought, I want to do more. And then at 15, my dad's percussion player got sick, his other percussion player. And my dad was playing timbali, so the guy playing congas, Victor, got sick. And they were doing a show in San Francisco, and it was for 3,000 people. And my dad didn't have anyone to play. And I was like, Daddy, let me play because I know all the songs. He's like, no, you're 15. You don't know. I said, no, but I know all the songs. And he knew I knew them. He kept saying no. So I went to my mom. I was like, Mommy, Daddy won't let me play. and I got my way. So we go to play the show.
15 years old and you're in front of 3,000 people.
Yeah, that was like the biggest. And that changed my life. That one show, that was it, that moment, playing with my dad. He had an 18-piece band. They were signed to Clive Davis. They were touring with Temptations, wow, Earth, Wind & Fire, and Stevie Wonder. So they were all signed to Clive Davis, except for Stevie, signed to Clive Davis. So they were touring together, and they just happened to do this one-off here in San Francisco. So I'm playing, and my dad motions to me, you know, take a solo. I'm like, oh, my God, I get to take a solo. I'm, like, freaking out. I start playing. I close my eyes, and again, very competitive. I love the high of competing, of winning, pushing myself. This was another moment and another level of musicianship, because this band, there's 18 pieces, and I had to like sit up straight. You know, here I'm in a position of like, I'm proud. My daddy's letting me play. And it's like, oh my God. So I'm really like in. And when I go, I go. And I close my eyes, started playing. And it's so strange because I literally had an out-of-body experience. And I saw myself leave my body. I'm looking down at me playing in the room. This is not a dream. This is what happened. People think this is like, no, it really did happen. I saw myself playing and going, wait, what is going on? Why am I looking down at me playing and the people are listening to me? Next thing I know, I opened my eyes. I didn't know where I was. I heard nothing. It sounded like it was like I was in a dream, like it was silent. And I'm opening my eyes and it's almost like I woke up and I'm looking and I'm still playing a solo. And I'm looking and I hear the roar of the crowd. And all of a sudden I could hear the sound of the music, the band. And they're like, you know, playing. And I'm still playing. I'm going, oh, my God, I don't know what just happened. And I started getting chills and I was shaking and I started crying. And I'm still taking a solo. My dad's looking at me like, what the heck?
Your dad's looking at you and saying, that's my girl right there. Right. You know, that's what he's doing.
Oh, my God. Incredible. After that, we came off stage. And I'm like, Daddy, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. I want to be a musician. He's like, no. That was it. We hugged each other and we cried because I've never experienced any. To me, here's what it was. I felt like I went to heaven. I felt like God had touched me and said, this is your gift. This is what you're going to do.
Yeah.
Like, here it is. And I told my dad, I was like, if this is what heaven feels like, I want to be in heaven every single day because I have never experienced anything like that in my life. And I was like, I need to do this every day because I don't know what just happened. And 2 weeks later, went out on tour, my first time with my dad and first time on a plane, we fly to Bogota, Colombia.
Wow, that's incredible. 15 years old and your life changed immediately at that moment in time. Out of body experience, looking at yourself, you knew you were killing it at the time. And I guess as a 15-year-old, you're probably just fearless, and you still are.
Exactly.
So I know you well enough where you are. You're fearless. We're going to take a quick break, Sheila, and then we're going to come back. And I know there's so much in between that and then getting into the glamorous life, but we're going to dig into the glamorous life, okay?
Okay.
So everybody, sit tight. We'll be right back with Sheila E. after a short break, and then we're going to dig into glamorous life.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Okay. All right, everybody. We are back with Sheila E. And true to the name, we're going to get into the story behind the song of Glamorous Life after that great guided tour about how you got into this business at 15. And from that point, there is so much. I know there's so much between that point to getting to Glamorous Life, which was from your debut album of the same name that was released in 1984. So tell us about the journey of getting into that song, because that was a song that was written by Prince, but you two were collaborating in the lab together. So tell us about that and just give us the story in your own words of how it all came to be and your debut album.
Right. So what happened was I was giving songs to Prince that I had written. And so at one point he said, you know, don't you want to do an album? Because you've been, at the time I was on tour with Lionel. He said, don't you want to just do your own thing? I was like, yeah. And he said, okay, well, let's do it. I was like, yeah, easier said than done. So anyway, he got me the deal instantly. We went into the studio, Sunset Sound. And so we started recording the record. We had a bunch of songs. We had ideas. Glamorous Life, I felt that we wrote together because I'm hearing now still stories about how this song kind of came about, because as far as I was concerned, we both wrote it because of the way that it came to me and how we had done it. And basically that song was almost the last song on the record. That was like the last song. And back in that time, we recorded on Glamorous Life album, 6 songs. And so they were long, like, let's eat up the time. But there was no, like, you had to do a 3-minute song. It's like, no, it's a 15-minute song, you know?
Interesting.
Yeah. So that he brought me some of the music. And again, like, I'm thinking we wrote this song together until, like, recently.
Yeah.
And so he's playing the music. And I'm like, oh, my God, you know, the percussion I want to put on it, like, this will be dope. And we're playing. So it was kind of left throughout the week. And I could not think of a melody to put on Glamorous Life. I kept, like, I don't know what to sing. I don't know what to, you know, because at the time I was still new in writing songs.
So you came up with the lyrics before you came up with the melody?
No. No, the music was first.
The music was first. Okay.
Yeah, the music was first. And that's the problem with me when I first started writing a lot was, if I hear a song and there are no lyrics and I haven't written the lyrics, or someone else, if we're collaborating, if I hear the song being an instrumental for too long, then that's what it is. I'm like lost. And again, early years, it's like, I don't hear a melody. I don't get it. So the music started coming together. And again, it's like we're in the studio nonstop. It's almost like a blur. Like, I never even hardly went to sleep the whole week. We just nonstop doing this record. And I'm playing. I was like, okay, let me put all this percussion on it and stuff like that. And we're recording, and he's doing the drum machine. And, you know, we're using the Linn machine. And I have one back here anyway. You can't see it.
Yeah.
So we're using that machine, and I'm playing all this percussion. I'm gonna take the solo. And I'm always thinking about, okay, even in playing and taking a solo, I'm going to go for it. But at the same time, if you think about, okay, wait, I also have to shoot a video, you know? And so if I'm going, I might have to mimic what I just played. But yeah, it didn't matter, because it's like, you have to hear what's going to happen. So the mentality for me in Glamorous Life is, this is a song, it's got to be very percussive. I'm putting everything into this one, and it's going to showcase me as a woman playing percussion, timbales, which a lot of people had not heard of. They did not know what timbales were, and to showcase me and then also sing and crossing over using Latin elements to cross over into a pop song.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah. And so I signed as an R&B artist, but Glamorous Life crossed us over. So I'm playing the song, and then Prince is coming up with the melodies and doing all this stuff. And next thing you know, the song is done. But it was the last song on the record, the last song. And it's so crazy because it's simple. I tell everyone, it's like, I can teach anyone to play Glamorous Life because it's all the black keys. So there you go. It's a simple song. It's like a nursery rhyme in a sense. Da, 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 yeah. Da. It's nursery rhyme.
Since it was the last song that was recorded for this album, did you immediately know that you had struck gold with that one? Like lightning in a bottle?
Yes, absolutely. 100%. Cause that, again, it was like, this is going to be the song that's going to introduce me. So the interesting part is, when you sign a record deal, you sign with an A&R person as well. And they help you put the record together. That didn't happen with Prince. He just let me do whatever. Like, you know, I mean, I was used to doing that anyway. And we collaborated, and he was just like, man, we're like, who's staying up the longest? We're going to get this done, you know?
Yeah. Well, you were both like, because he was known as like this relentless worker like yourself too. So you were working like day and night in the studio.
We met each other as match, because I pushed him just as much as he pushed me. Like, it was crazy. Like, we were just like, who's staying up the longest? Who's doing, you know, we were just like crazy. Like, we literally, I was telling one of my security guys the other day, he was with me during that time. And I remember him sitting out in the lobby like that, and just passed out. And then I'd have to wake him up. Come on, let's go. Well, I'm going to sleep 3 hours and I'm coming back. I'm just going to change, you know, like I wanted to get this record done. So we didn't sign to an A&R. I didn't. And I finished the record. I went to Burbank Studios to shoot the cover, and I actually just turned in the project to Warners. I didn't ask them any, like, oh, I need help. I don't need any help. I know what I want, you know? I don't need any. No, I know what I want. I know I wanted to change my name because people had problems with Escovedo and how they would say it. So I just want to say this, because turning in the record, Warner Brothers wanted me to release Bella St. Mark first. That was a cool song. I'm in love, I'm in love, I'm in love with the Belle of St. Mark. It's a really fun song, right?
Oh,
and
yeah.
I was like, yeah. But the purpose behind Glamorous Life was to make sure that I featured myself as a percussionist. That was the song that was going to announce who I was as a woman playing timbales. So we put it in, and Warner Brothers like, no, we're going to, Belle of St. Mark is the first single. And I'm like, no, it's not. It's Glamorous Life. They're like, no, it's Belle of St. Mark. I said, no, it's Glamorous Life. And I said, listen, I'm playing timbales. This is a solo. How many people do you know play timbales, playing a solo, a woman leading her band and play? And then they said, well, what are timbales? That's my point.
How about
exactly
that? The label said, what are timbales?
Right. So here's the thing. I said, okay, let me prove my point. They made me do a show. They didn't make me. They asked me, because it made sense to do a showcase at Warner's in the courtyard to present to them what we were trying to do. I did the showcase. We released Glamorous Life as the first single. They got it. Because there was no other woman. Because here's the thing. They said to me, okay, this is a really great song. We'll use it as the second single. I said, no, it's got to be the first. Because I'm the only one doing what I'm doing. And they're like, okay, well, who can we Give us someone else's name that does what you do. There is no other. That is what I'm saying. So Glamorous Life is the song that we created to showcase me as a percussion player and a woman playing a so-called male instrument and still being sexy and out there doing her thing.
How about that? So again, this is a fearless threat of yours, because a lot of people, they have their first big record that's coming out. The label's telling them to do something, and I would say that the majority of people are going to want to please the label, right? And you said, I'm going to do it my way. And so I have a lot of questions about that, first of all, because I didn't ask. You were collaborating with Prince, and you collaborated on a number of songs. One of my favorite songs, by the way, I love this song. Erotic City is a great song, and I think you sang backup vocals for that one. Correct? You're on.
Co-lead and background. Yep.
Yeah, it's a great song. And I grew up in Minneapolis, and so like Prince was near and dear to us, right, you know, back in the day. So I didn't ask you. I neglected to ask you. When did you first, and how did you first meet Prince?
1977, I think.
Well before the first album.
Yeah, but he came to the Bay Area, and my dad was, again, in Santana at the time, and they were recording at a studio in San Francisco. And Prince came there to record his first record. He wanted to be in the studio that Sly had recorded in, and Carlos, because he admired them so much. He loved the Bay Area musicians, and so he wanted to come to the Bay Area to do his first record. So he was there, and my dad came home and said, he said, wow, this young kid is next door in the studio, and he's recording his record. He looks like he's producing it, and he's playing all the instruments. And I'm like, wow. I said, what's his name? He said, Prince. I said, really? Wow, I can't wait to meet him. I said, Pops, I'm going to come to the studio. He goes, no, we're working. You can't come to the studio. So anyway, I end up seeing Prince first I don't know if that was the first time I saw him, at an Al Jarreau concert at the Greek Theater. And we were opposite ends, and we both looked at each other like, and I saw him, I was like, oh my God, who is that? That's who he is, right? And then I come back, I don't know how soon later, but I had a poster of him in my bedroom, because my friend said, the guy that you're talking about, the record came out. It just came out. I was like, okay. So I go to this place in Berkeley called Leopold's. I get the poster, I put it in my room on the wall, because I had posters of everyone. I looked at it, and I said, I'm going to meet you someday. Watch. Right. Soon after, he's playing San Francisco at a place called Circle Star. And I met him there backstage.
How about that? Okay. So that was in like 1977. So then you collaborate on that. But I also neglected to ask you, when did you first start singing? Because you were a young queen of percussion starting at when you were 15 years old. And you had that concert at 15 in front of 3,000 people. But when did you actually start singing and feel comfortable singing?
I was singing when I was younger, even in the local band that I played and sang, you know, little background and stuff. When I did Glamorous Life record, that was like the first time singing as a solo artist. I sang behind Lionel. I mean, here's a quick little story. But so when I was touring with Lionel in 83, he had the song with Diana Ross that was out. And so he wanted me to sing that song with him as the duet on his tour. And I'm like, Lionel, that's Diana Ross. There's no way I can sing. I can't do that. Like, I'm not even ready for that. So he spent hundreds of thousands of dollars to put this thing together where she sings with him as they move throughout the stage. And he goes, look what I had to spend because you won't sing with me. I wasn't comfortable then. So again, when I was growing up, all the money that I made, I would buy my own studio equipment to teach myself how to write, produce, sing, do everything like that. And so I still wasn't comfortable with singing. I always sang backup with George Duke, everyone else, right? And then to do my record, I wasn't fully comfortable. I had to just like, but this is me now. So I was like, I got to do this. Okay, I got to get this done. I'm, you know, and I was still learning, you know, how to control my voice. I'm not a taught singer, and I don't sing as a singer. I sing as a percussion player. Percussionist trying to sing.
Isn't that interesting?
It is, totally. Because when I what I ended up doing on later songs that I had written on other albums, I would have different singers sing the song for me. I would show them the song and they would sing it. And I learned how to sing past a beat because it's not that I sing in time. Yes. But I have to lay back and sing like a singer to pass that beat. I thought that would help me to flow better as a singer. So there, I mean, I've learned so much. And that being said, I didn't get comfortable for a really long time. It took me a minute. And then because I know so many people that are singers that can sing. And I'm known as a percussion player, but I love singing. And then I realized I had to accept that what I have is who I am, who God created, and this is what I can do, and I'm going to make the best of it. And don't limit myself to just because I'm not like a great singer, but there's things that I can do and make it fun and enjoy myself and experiment.
Yeah, don't sell yourself short. My God, your first album comes out and you have the massive hits right from day one. And as a former percussionist, like a poor man's percussionist from back in the day, I know how hard it is to concentrate on doing your percussion work, but then singing on top of that is crazy. You know, that's a special skill to be able to do all that. So and pretty wild. And then just one last thing about Glamorous Life, the lyrics, how did that come to you then as you were working those out? Because you mentioned a little bit about the fact that you wanted to have the percussion, like that was your life and you wanted that to come out. But did that just, okay, you had an idea, then it just started flowing from you?
Well, again, this was an instrumental. It was hard for me to understand, but to hear it as a song that would be sung, because I had a lot of songs that were instrumental because I couldn't think of melodies, or sometimes I mean, again, learning and creating and writing, the process is so different now from what it was then and to what it is now, and realizing it's nice to just tell a story first. That story didn't come first. The music to me came first. So Prince was in tune with who I am as a person, not just a musician, but as a person, and how much I love my family, and love is important to me. How important, like everything in my life is about love and is about, you know, your heart. And so basically saying I do want to be a superstar, absolutely. And it is glamorous. And we're going to make it glamorous because there is no other woman playing percussion. And again, going back to the who said girls can't play drums, I said to him, I want to dress sexy. I know what I want to look like. I know what the band wants to look like. I'm going to change her hair. I'm going to cut his hair. I'm going to color her hair. Oh, I was like, I know what it looks like. I've been waiting for this moment. I went with his creative team and we figured it out. Being glamorous is like, that's the thing. Being glamorous and being sexy, playing drums is so sexy, right? But without love in Glamorous Life, without love, it doesn't mean anything. Without love, it ain't much.
Yeah,
it means nothing. And he knew that. It's like everything for me. And he knew how close, he knew how close I was with my family. And when I first brought him to see me play with my family so that he could see what Latin jazz music was, he had no idea, never heard it before in his life. He's like, what is this? Latin jazz? Are you kidding me? Like, where did you guys come from? So for him to see the camaraderie between my dad and my brothers with a 12, 14 piece band playing Latin jazz, he was blown away. It was never the same after that. It's like, you gotta be kidding me. So the love was so important. So again, that one song, we knew that direction and what had to happen. And again, I'm still learning about like all these songs that he had written. I guess when we first met, and again, I know for a fact there's way more than 200 songs that I played on that are in the vault. I don't even remember.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
Yeah.
And then before we're going to take a short break very soon, but I do have to ask, Do you have a favorite memories of, because you were such kindred spirits, you and Prince, do you have a favorite memory? Or is that too difficult to identify one? But do you have a favorite memory of Prince?
Favorite memory? No, I mean, I think the biggest, of course, we had fun being in the studio and playing and just jamming and creating. Just, you know, we'd set up the gear and we just start playing. And next thing you know, it's a song. Just sitting there, just playing. And we would create like that. I think the most fun I always had really is competing with him. I was always trying to beat him at everything. And then he would compete with me, trying to beat me at everything. So that competitiveness between the two of us, like that was the thing.
Yeah, no, that's cool. That's very cool. Thanks for taking us through that. We're going to take a quick break and then we're going to come back and we're going to get into the second song, Bylar, which is one of Sheila's latest songs or most recent songs. And so I'll ask her why she chose that. So just a few moments and we'll be right back.
What Witch, This, That, or the Other? From Bonnaroo to Coachella, traversing the music festival landscape can be tricky. That's where we come in with high fives for everyone. The What Podcast with Brad Barry, Lord Taco, dedicated to exploring the entire festival scene.
Brad has worked in the radio industry for more than 20 years and currently lives in Brooklyn, where he is program director for three stations, including one in New York, one in Detroit, and one in Miami.
Barry's been a reporter for the Chattanooga Times Free Press, covering all aspects of the entertainment industry since 1987. That's before you were born.
Lord Taco, the smart guy who makes these podcasts on our website at thewhatpodcast.com work, also really good at identifying babies, loves blue-haired moms, PBR, and his beautiful Volkswagen bus.
We all fell in love with the Bonnaroo Festival years ago, not only because of the amazing bands that play there every year, but also because of the incredible community spirit that has developed around it. Radiate positivity.
And we really like talking about the inside baseball stuff when it comes to putting on a huge music festival. So join us.
You can hear the What Podcast on the Consequence Podcast Network or anywhere you find your favorite podcasts.
Okay, we are back, everybody, with Sheila E., the fearless Sheila E., queen of percussion. And now you know how her journey came to be. And Sheila, one thing I didn't ask you about, too, is that, as you said, you were this young woman getting into what many people thought was kind of a man's world of drums and percussion. Did you ever feel any kind of intimidation from that? Or did people try to intimidate you because you were a woman?
Oh, absolutely. I wasn't intimidated. No, not at all. Very confident in who I was. Yeah. I did not have a problem. In fact,
you love the fact. You love that, right? You thrived on that.
I did. Yeah. I did. No, I mean, there were things at the very beginning once I left Oakland and started recording with other artists and flying to L.A. In the studio, being hired by other people, and then I'd walk into the room and the other drummers there, you know, and they would say nasty things or whatever. And I mean, one time I walked in, the drummer turned around and goes, "Oh, hey, can you give me a cup of coffee?" And I'm like, "Wait, what? I
get it yourself."
Yeah, no, I was like, "I'm not the receptionist. However, I'll get you a cup of coffee. I'm the percussion player." They're like, "What?" You know, so that first beginning stage of trying to find out who I was and walking into a room and people not really knowing who I was, you know, a lot of bad things were said, and the crazy offers. Oh my God, it was just very strange. But I talked to my parents about it, and I think what for sure helped me a lot was having the confidence, and that confidence came with my dad saying, "Be 15 minutes early. Make sure you're on time. Learn all the music, whatever you have to learn, just be prepared." The preparation, once you know that, allows you to walk into a room with confidence because you're not going to stress out about anything. You're going to have fun because you're ready to go. And I love that. I love that.
Yeah, I love that too. I think that's so true. I think so many people underestimate the power and the importance of preparation for things, no matter what
Absolutely.
You do.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so let's break into the second song, all right? I always ask the icon, in this case, Sheila, your second song, any song of yours that you would like to discuss and tell us the story behind. You chose Bylar, the salsa version, from one of your recent singles. I think it was 2021, right? It was released uh-huh. last year.
Yeah.
And that song was co-written with B. Slade, is that correct?
Uh-huh.
Okay, so tell us why you chose that song.
I chose this song because this is the first time in my career thus far that I've ever recorded a salsa record or salsa song. Like, I've played on other people's records, salsa records, you know, Mi Tierra with Gloria Estefan. You know, I've played with Tito Puentes when he was alive a lot, my dad and I. Jammed with Eddie Palmieri. I mean, a lot of groups. And I've, on my bucket list, which is like tons of pages of stuff, I had on there that I wanted to do a salsa record. So I said, well, let me release a salsa single first and see how it goes. And this song was written by B. Slade and I, 7 years ago at least. And we released it as an R&B, maybe longer than that, but released it as an R&B on one of my other records. And it went well in Europe. And so I was talking to Tony Sukar, who's an amazing timbali player, percussionist, and producer, incredible arranger. And I said, I want to do a salsa record with you. I want you to produce the record with me. He's like, absolutely, right? We've been talking about it for years. So we end up, he's like, I said, here's some of the music that I have. He's like, let's do this one, because he heard me play it. We played it live. And he's like, we should do this one and flip this. And I was like, yeah. So he came up with the arrangement, and we had Luis Enrique, myself, Tony, and Michael Gabriel B. Slade, you know, kind of collab with making this very salsa. Tony Sukar credited him, and Mark Quinones, for the arrangement of it. Just incredible. It's just something that I've always wanted. And my first time, like, I can't even believe, like, I'm going to be 65 this year. First time ever recording a salsa song for myself. Now, I don't speak great Spanish. I don't really understand a lot. It was great to have Luis Enrique. I love him so very much. He's a dear friend. And he's just like loving to be a part of this, him and his producer as well. And he just sang his butt off on this, you know, and it sounded incredible. And then I'm singing some of the backgrounds in Spanish, of course, and being able to do this and then film the video.
It's a great video.
I've never done this.
Yeah, it's a lot of energy.
I've never done this. Yeah, it is. Yeah. And live, I mean, I can't wait to play it live. Well, I've done it live with the R&B version, but not the salsa version. So I can't wait to do it. And again, on my bucket list and first time ever doing it, I just wanted to share it with people. And people are kind of going crazy over it because they're like, you've done salsa records before. I was like, yeah, but not my own. This is a first, so I'm just excited.
So is that going to lead to more?
Yes, I'm actually doing an entire
record.
Okay,
so tell us about that. And the dates and all of that.
Yeah, we have the most of the songs and the ideas that we're ready to record. And so now we just have to pick the date because we kept pushing it. And then people getting sick and who's going. So Tony then now had a new baby and he's like, I'm going to be ready in about a month. And he's calling me going, I thought having a kid was going to be easy.
Yeah. So, good luck with that.
So he's trying to get his life back together so we can get in the studio. So we should be starting possibly in about a month and we'll do the record. And I'm really excited because the ideas of it, I do want to do a little bit of a tribute to Fania All-Stars because I grew up listening to Fania All-Stars. And that includes, you know, Ray Barreto, Johnny Pacheco, Celia Cruz, Tito Puente. So many people were a part of the Fania family. But I'm going to do one song, you know, that I love that represents that culture. And also a song that my dad can play on to you know, represent him. And then I'm going to keep it in the vein of Like Bailar, which is keeping the element musically with that Bay Area sound, but a little bit of R&B mixed in the salsa. And because I think that makes it my own and not just strictly salsa. And it is the foundation of what that's going to be, but making a little bit more Spanglish as well.
Okay, so when you say Bay Area sound, what do you mean by that?
Bay Area sound is a little bit everything. It's a pot of gumbo.
Okay.
And you put
gotcha.
Everything in it, all the spices, and you have that little flavor that you're going, what is that? Oakland.
there you go. I like that. Okay, yeah. So your next project for music is gonna be that. Tell us about touring. I know that, and I think you just had something called the Funk Fest with Morris Day, right?
Yeah.
And Morris Day, another great artist, and back in my hometown, so I got to do a shout out to Morris Day and the Time back from Minneapolis, because that was, you know, those were my days. Love the Time. So what was that like at Funk Fest and playing again after people have been cooped up for such a long time?
Yeah, it was Atlantic Star and then myself and then Morris. And we had an incredible time. It was sold out and people just partied. Oh, my God. I mean, after I was done playing, you know, I was exhausted. I mean, I did a 45, 50 minute, like we pared it down because there's three bands. And and usually when there's two bands, we were able to play a little bit longer. So I pared it down and there was only, I think I stopped only one time to talk and it was just song after. So I segued through everything. And then I did a Prince tribute at the end and they just went crazy. I had so much fun. And by the time I got ready to bow, I always introduce my band and they're coming forward. We're getting ready to take a bow. And I was so out of breath. And I looked at the bass player. I was like, and him on bass, like I couldn't even say his name. I was exhausted. And it was so much fun. And people were like, yay! And yeah. I said, hey, you know, I'm a little bit tired. I'm just getting back. Come on now. I'm gonna get it together. I'm going to be 65. And then I always close with this Mary J. Blige song from the front of house that my guy plays in the front of house. And I started dancing. They're like, go Sheila. It was just insane. I mean, it was a drop the mic performance with the whole band. We had so much fun. We had a standing ovation. What can I say?
I've no doubt.
Was it,
given what you just described, was it brutal for you to, during COVID, to be stuck inside and not getting that kind of, you know, that kind of energy? Do you love touring?
Oh, yes. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing for me is a part of definitely being able to do both. Being in the studio and then playing live. That makes a perfect marriage for me. Like I need both. It's hard to do one without the other. And I miss one if I don't do the other, you know, it's the perfect marriage for me. And I did at the beginning, I didn't miss it so much because we were so busy, in 2019. Like, I think, you know, we were out almost 200 days. I don't know. We did a lot and it was nice to be home for a minute. And I enjoyed it for about 2-3 months. 2 months. The third month, I was like, this doesn't feel right. What is happening? And that's why then I started the Sheila E. television show, you know, Sheila E. TV. And I started getting creative. And I got in the studio. And then after a while, I was like, this doesn't feel right. This is weird. Like, I need the people. I need to be fed. That's part of my food. I feel like I'm going, you know?
Yeah.
It was a little rough.
Well, listen, you know, I know that Queen of Percussion broke new ground, Fearless, played with all the legends, and they all played with you because they see you and saw you as their peer with the greatest names. And as we've talked about before, what a life. Meant to be a documentary, and, you know, a little bird tells me that there may be a documentary in the future coming out. So we'll look for that.
Yes.
But I want to get into, before we close, lightning round. I want to ask you some things, okay?
Okay.
So, look, it's going to be fast and furious, Sheila.
So, okay.
Your favorite career moment, was there one? It could be anything, but is there anything that sticks out in your mind?
That show that I explained earlier at 15 years old with my dad, because that changed my life. That was the beginning of my professional career.
Makes sense. What are you proudest of in your body of work?
Oh man.
See, I make it tough.
Yeah. I would almost say maybe I haven't done it yet.
Ah, I like that. I like that. Okay.
Yeah.
And if you didn't become this one is a tough one for you because it was always in the cards. Yeah, just you started so young. But if you didn't become an artist or musician, what do you think you would be doing?
Winning gold medals. Yeah, hands down. There was nothing else. It was being an athlete. But then God said, no, you're going to get gold albums instead. See? It works out.
Luck. For those of you who are listening, there's a full wall of gold records, and they're on all sides of the room. And we can only, for those of you who are watching, you can only see one side, but it's on all sides. And then new artists that you admire. Are there any that stick out in your mind?
I love her. She's from the Bay Area. She's amazing. I love her. There's so many. Billie Eilish. She's incredible. Man, Becky G. Bruno Mars, Anderson .Paak.
Silk Sonic are amazing.
Yeah, they're incredible. Yeah. There's so many. Charlie. Wow. I don't know. There's a lot. There's a lot of like the neo soul type artists. There's so many. I should make the list because there's so many. When people ask me, I forget and I feel bad because I follow so many people and I'm so inspired by the new music. I really am. It's very
well. That's
very
because
cool.
It's part of your eclecticism in terms of music. Naturally, that makes sense that you're listening to all different sounds and different ideas, and then different pieces. I would imagine you make them your own. You bring them into what you're creating next. And then before we go, are there any other projects that we should know about?
So besides the salsa record I'm getting ready to do, I'm also going to do a gospel record, inspirational record, I should say. And that's in the works. And right now I have 75% of a dance record done. I also just recorded about a month ago, maybe a month ago, E-Train is my other band that I have. Sheila E. and the E-Train. We cut that record in 2 days. So all I have to do is do some vocals and percussion. And that's done. So I have like 5 records I'm working on.
Well, everybody should look for you on social media. Follow Sheila E. An amazing career so far. And there's so much that's going to be coming. Sheila, it was delightful to spend some time with you and get the stories behind those two wonderful songs, but also just about the journey of your life and all the great things you've done.
Thank you.
So congratulations on all that. Welcome to the Story of the Sound. And everybody out there, join me next month for another episode with another icon, music icon. But Sheila E. is wonderful. And thank you.
Thank you.
That was music icon and queen of percussion herself, Sheila E., sharing her in-depth story behind her breakout pop hit Glamorous Life and her most recent single from last year, the salsa version of Bailar. I'm your host, Peter Chatti. You can follow me on Twitter at pchatti. That's P, C like cat, S like Sam, A like apple, T like Tom, H like Harry, Y like yellow, and at deepcutsmedia.com. For more of the story behind the song, make sure you like and subscribe wherever you get your podcast, and tune in on the third Monday of every month for new episodes. Also, make sure you're following the Consequence Podcast Network to keep up to date with all our series at consequence.net/consequence-podcast-network. And as always, thanks for listening to the story behind the song.